All right, and we are rolling. So thank you, everyone, who's tuning in to another episode of A Businessman's Guide to Almost Everything, the show where I, your host, Cole Presenge, get to sit down with interesting folks from a myriad of fields. We get to take a look at what they do, what makes them tick, and some of the problems that they face in their everyday work lives. So today with me, I have a new guest. Rebecca, would you introduce yourself, who you are, and what you do?
Absolutely. My name is Rebecca Sedge. I'm a freelance writer and editor here in Bellingham, or I guess we're in Linden, in Bellingham.
All right. So freelance writer and editor, right off the bat, does that mean you just really liked writing essays as a high school student? You just like, yeah, I want to keep this. This is it.
Absolutely not. I was not a fan of writing essays until I got to the writing part. Once I started writing, I couldn't stop. Brevity was not my strong suit, but definitely not that. Being a writer and editor means a few different things. There's a bunch of different types of those things. A freelance writer just means you work with clients to make copy, which essentially is just a word for writing. You use your words to get a certain message across. And with editing, typically it depends what type you do, but especially with novels, like I tend to prefer, it's just making sure that the wording, the story, everything comes together in a way that presents the story how the author wants, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Almost like a coach or an advisor, I suppose, at a certain point.
Yeah, sort of.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's look at it from a business mindset, because I'm coming in, I hear that you're a writer, that you're an editor. And if there was a job that a regular business officer was going to ask you to do, what are the kinds of jobs that they probably want you to do for them?
Oh, well, that varies quite a bit. If you don't mind, I can get into what kind of the differences are.
Absolutely.
So there's kind of three main different categories, I'd say. There's content, copy, and technical writing. Content, in theory, the idea is content writing is just information. So it's an article telling you about something. Copywriting has a purpose. It has an intention. You want people to do something, and you're using the words to convince them to do something. Mm. And technical is kind of supposed to be after something's sold, you're explaining what to do with it, kind of thing. Mm. And there's a lot of gray area with a lot of them. So like with a blog or something like that, in theory, it's content writing. But if you're writing a blog for a business, they want you to use the content, whatever you're writing about, to subtly sell their business and convince people to use their business. So especially with content and copywriting, there's a lot of crossover. Especially I love doing newsletters and blogs. And so that kind of thing, it's a little bit of a gray area. But with technical, it's more manual, manuals, how-to guides, things like that.
So every time I see a like top 10 camera list for the year 2025, that's presented as copy, but it's also serving, that's presented as informational content, but it's also serving a copy role.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. So that's good to know. Who are the kinds of people that you find that you tend to work with often?
It's varied pretty wildly. I am still in earlier phases than other people. And so I'm kind of, that work sounds interesting. Let's do it. Yeah, let's try that out as well. Mm. But a lot of small local businesses have been really great with working with me and people that I know locally. And I have a lot of just community here that's really great at referring me. And so it's local business, a lot of nonprofit as well.
So you touched on something there that you're relatively new to this field. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So how long have you been doing editing and writing?
In an official capacity March.
Sure.
Before that, I've been doing a lot of side things and projects on the side for a year and a half now, I'd say.
Mm. So like many people in business, their career became a larger product of something they were doing almost in their hobby as a pastime.
Yeah, I kind of got my start in little ways starting a year and a half ago to kind of set myself up for success before I took the leap of cutting out other work and focusing on this for an actual income.
Mm, gotcha. So I know one of the other things that you do in addition to copy and technical writing is that you also do journalism. Mm-hmm. Where does that fall into your writing methodology?
Yeah, so journalism is a really interesting one. It's at least supposed to be content writing in its purest form. It's supposed to be factual, unbiased, all of that. Again, in theory, it also depends on what you work for. Some news sources are meant to be biased. But journalism is a very special one. It's very difficult in ways I had not expected. When you go into writing, a lot of people say, don't do journalism unless you have a journalism degree. And I wound up just accidentally falling into place with journalism. I had an opportunity and I took it. So it was a very hard learning curve. But it's very involved. It's very specific. And that you would think it takes away some of the creativity because you have to write only facts and research and you have to interview people and say it a specific way. But it's a new form of creativity because it's a challenge. And so I've had to really learn how to use the facts to still tell a story while putting the news up front and doing the things you have to do to manage engagement and the reality of writing online, because mine is an entirely online newsroom.
Yeah, I think there's a good point in that. And like I say, this is someone who also does something of a creative work where historically, and we even have signs for this now, people tend to be the most creative when they have some amount of limitations put onto them. It's why you see so many, like, movies are probably the easy example. You get some directors like, I'm making my own movie, it's my own dream. And oftentimes it's this incomprehensible mess. Even though you look at their earlier career when they were in like these rough stages where they had so many limitations, they almost accidentally create these wonderful masterpieces.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, my only short story that I've had published myself is from a prompt I was given in school where they literally just said, you have to write the story in a laundromat. It has to be someone writing about being in a laundromat. And it turned into this horror tragedy short story, and we had 1,000 words to write it. And this was early into the school days. Like I said, brevity is not my strong suit. So keeping that entire story under 1,000 words felt impossible at first. And then it turned into this whole thing. And I did extend it a little bit before sending it to go to publication. So it was more like 1,100. But still, being put under that challenge was what really allowed it to flow, because I got to focus on the characters and the story so much more when I didn't have to worry about setting. And I knew I only have 1,000 words. I got to make every single word count.
Yeah, I sympathize with that. I remember when I was in high school, similar thing. I only spent a little bit of time in high school, but we had a teacher come out. She said, okay, we're going to do a writing assignment, 2,500 words. You get a story out. It's got to be about these themes, Like, okay, I could do that. I didn't. I did 14,000 words and she got really mad at me.
No.
Yeah. But I mean, in the exact opposite direction, there is something about the wonderful effectiveness of being concise and limited. Ernest Hemingway, of course, has the famous 6-word story, which is baby shoes for sale, never used. God, it gets you every time, right?
Every time.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about what your day-to-day looks like. So you're a freelance worker, writing, editing, do a little bit of journalism. What does your day look like normally?
It's a little chaotic at times, but I'm getting that balance slowly but surely. I have to really separate myself when I'm doing writing versus editing. I have to come out of one and into the other. Journalism, the hard thing with that is that a lot of things aren't on my timeline. One of the good things about the Salish Current being a nonprofit newsroom is that even though we're not always right on top of things, we're kind of later to the news. It means we have more time to follow up with contacts and to do research to make it a more in-depth story. And so a lot of what I'm doing is going to tour new places that have opened and going to visit nonprofits and see what they do and speak with contacts. So I have to do things on their timeline sometimes, and I have to wait for people to reply and wait for updates from certain stories. So I have to kind of work my life around that. And I think that's been the most difficult part. But outside of that, I have to schedule everything in advance. And then I tell myself I'm only editing until I go do this interview. And I make sure that after an interview, I've set aside time for writing. So I get every single thing that I want down immediately down after I've had this interview or I've had this talk with a contact. So it's all fresh in my mind and I have that excitement and that thrill that comes with it, you know?
What's the difference in the mindset between editing and writing? Because it seems like it's pretty substantial.
It's hard sometimes to switch between the two because when you're writing, you're creating things either with your own voice or with the brand's voice, whatever you're working on. And you have to dive really deeply into that voice and create your own work. But when you're going into editing, you have to remind yourself that this is not yours. You cannot put your own work or your own writing style into theirs. And so you really have to learn to adapt to other people's writing styles. So I always have to take a break, get myself some tea. I'll like change the lighting by turning on a different lamp or something. and just reset completely, because if I jump from one into the other, I'll be thinking too much about how I write or how I would write for that project. And editing this book, I need to be in their mindset, and I need to give them advice based on their own writing style and their own voice.
Sounds like both are, in their own ways, incredibly creatively challenging.
Yeah.
Writing, very obviously so, but with the editing part, it's probably, it's a challenge to think of ways to provide feedback without providing, hey, this is what I would like you to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the, do you mind if I go into the differences of types? I feel like that'll help.
No, of course, go for it.
Yeah, so mainly there's developmental line copy and copy editing, and then proofreading. And what a lot of people don't understand is the first three all tie into the story. And so developmental is explaining storyline. It's going through the process, the character development, character arcs. Line editing is going line by line, making sure every sentence, all of the grammar, everything fits into the story. And copy is very specific. It's punctuation and grammar, but it's all to make sure everything reads the way you want to send the message. Mm. Proofreading is the one where it just, oh, that's a bad comma. Oh, take that out. Oh, fix that. And they're all important, but they all have their own challenges, absolutely. Mm. And you have to stick within the scope of what you're doing. You can't really do developmental and copy on the same book because you're going to miss something. Mm. So that's why we have different editors for the same project line. You can kind of gray area put into one or the other.
Interesting.
But, yeah, so it does come with its own challenges, depending even on the type of editing you're doing. But you really have to set yourself into that author's mindset while still offering your own creative viewpoint on everything.
Is there a particular one that you prefer?
Yeah, I strongly favor developmental. I love a good plot twist. I love storyline. I am especially good at character arcs and character development. Mm. So I really love developmental, but I'm such a nerd. I love copy editing too. So I'm happy to do any of it.
So here, let's talk about some of the other things that you do. So your work has taken you to meet a lot of different people. We met through mm-hmm. networking.
Yeah.
One of the other groups I know that you're affiliated with is Hunger Versus Hunger. Mm-hmm. So first of all, tell us a little bit, what is Hunger Versus Hunger?
Yeah. So actually Hunger Versus Hunger technically is one person. Mm. It's Ethan Hunger. He is a local just real estate agent who decided he was going to help when COVID hit and people were really struggling. And so the food bank, the Bellingham Food Bank, which is now the biggest food bank in all of Washington State.
Wow.
Yeah. They've been struggling to kind of keep up with the need as it increased severely. And so he decided one year, oh, I'm going to run this fitness challenge, 10,000 calories for $10,000, and get sponsors and make money for them. And he thought it would end there, but it didn't. The numbers continued to rise and funding didn't. Funding depleted because we ran out of ARPA funding after COVID. And so he continued to do it. And next thing he knew, it was 12,000 calorie challenge, which is what it is now. And on top of that, he started working with local businesses to host community events like fun runs and nights where you go to a brewery and part of the funds go to them. And all of these crazy things, the Ski to Sea block party this year was incredible. They got $25,000 at this one event.
Wow.
So yeah, it was absolutely wonderful. But yeah.
So what do you do as a, mm-hmm. Because you're not, I don't think formally a partner of the organization, but mm-hmm. you're there volunteering your time.
Yeah. So we call me the publicist. Mm-hmm. Essentially he does a lot of stuff on his own. Almost everything is on his own, but a few of us have stepped up to help where we can. And so I stepped up and said, I'll do some press releases last year. And this year I came to him and I was like, hey, crazy idea. What about a newsletter? And the mm-hmm. next day he woke up, whether he liked it or not, to a marketing proposal of like, this is what I would do. This is how I would write it, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, I love it. Let's do it. So now I write a newsletter that comes out every other week throughout the season, which is May through August. And then it'll be kind of as needed after that.
Yeah, that's a fair bit of work, though.
So much work. Yeah, definitely more than I expected.
So how did you get involved with him then?
So he and I, we've never, like, we weren't like close friends when I suggested this, but we'd met like a couple times a year at parties through like shared friends. Mm. And then when I was getting into journalism last year, yeah, timeline's getting thrown off. I told him, hey, I actually, before coming here, looked it up and I realized no one's written about this since 2021. That's crazy. This is incredible. Can I write about it? And he said, absolutely. And I sat down and interviewed him and the rest is history.
Hey, no, that's great. It's a sign of a great cause if they can't help but pull people in who are looking at them and they can't help but get involved.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really wonderful thing.
So you do newsletters for them. That's probably content writing. Is that about right?
Yeah. It's kind of a lot of copy though as well, because as much as people think of copy and marketing as like, oh, you're trying to sell a product, it's like, no, the idea is you want someone to be involved. You want someone to be engaged. And so we want people to know that there are really fun events that they can go to. We want them to donate. Like we can't hide that we want something, but it's because this is a really good cause. So it feels really good to be using copywriting for something positive and seeing, oh, people are using the links, they're going to donate. Like it feels really good to be a part of that, but it is kind of copywriting.
So have you found that there's a difference, whether in the atmosphere or in the demands, between working for not-for-profits and for-profits?
A little bit. Yeah. It's definitely, I'm a little newer to the for-profits, doing like more work for them. But I've worked a lot more with nonprofits, and it feels a little more relaxed. And also a lot of them, they're less likely to know exactly what they want or what they're looking for. So there's a little more creative freedom sometimes. But either way, you just have to make expectations clear up front. And that's a big part of it, and make sure that you're a good fit, because at the end of the day, it's okay for you to not be a good fit for a certain project. So yeah, for profit, sometimes a little less creative freedom, a little higher expectations, sometimes higher pay though.
Okay.
That's always something worth considering. But yeah, not for profit, I think, is just a little more relaxed at times.
Sounds like that's kind of an ideal route then for someone who's just getting into the copywriting field.
Yeah. Nonprofits are a really good place to start for writing, because they, you know, can't afford to pay as much usually, but also they have a lot of creative freedom that they're willing to let go of a lot of the time. But they really want it to be effective, and they're all there because they're passionate about it. And if you're a writer who's young and hungry and you're passionate and you're excited to go, it's kind of just a great natural fit just in terms of what you want to do and why you're there as well. So I think that's why I've really enjoyed jumping into it with a lot of nonprofits.
Gotcha. So it seems like writing and editing, related but different fields.
Yeah.
So I suppose this goes for each of them respectively. But what's the most challenging and at the same time the most rewarding part of each field?
Ooh, let's see. It's definitely challenging to be self-motivated because it is entirely on you. Once you've signed the contract, everything's happening. You have to do everything yourself. But that also makes it really rewarding at the end of the day, because it's, I did this, I sat down and I made this happen, and I did it the best that I could. And also the people side of things. A lot of what I do is interacting. People think of writing and editing as a very solitary thing, and it can be in ways, but you do have to do a lot of communicating and a lot of networking as a freelancer. And that's my favorite part. It was terrifying at first to get myself out the door and start just networking and meeting people and finding contacts, reaching out to contacts for journalism. But after a little while, I was just thrilled by it and I was excited to keep going. So it's definitely both.
I don't know how many times I've made mention of it on this show specifically, but one of the things I didn't expect was when you start your own business, there's a lot of networking, and oftentimes the networking just makes for great connections. They lead to business. Everyone leaves off happier because someone's got a service and someone got paid. But there's also just some like really nice people that you meet.
Yep.
And you're like, hey, we can actually spend time outside of work together. I haven't been able to do that since college. Making friends again.
Yeah. I actually last night sat down and had a dinner with two of my editing mentors, who one of them I hadn't met in person before. So that was really great. And originally it was just, hey, can I buy you a coffee and hear a bit about what you do? And both of them individually had said, no, you can't buy me a coffee. I'll buy you a coffee. All I ask is that when you're in our position, you pay it forward for someone else who's starting out. And then now we're kind of friends and we hang out outside of that. And I'm going to a writing conference this weekend and we're excited to say hi and hang out together a little bit.
That's a great attitude. It really is. And we were just talking. I was just talking to another fella. I'm not sure the episode will be out just yet, but he was making mention of how there are people in his field. And so oftentimes it's easy for them to kind of bring their competition down because they see them more as rivals than they do see them as competition that refines iron, you know, iron sharpening iron. There's a way that you can look at other people who are in your space, provide mentorship to them, or provide like a fun competition that's valuable to everyone. We can make friends. It's good for business. Why not?
Absolutely. And I know people think of making friends a lot of the time with networking as like, oh, you make friends with clients and people who will pay you. Mm. But one of the things I love about the writing community here is that everyone is working to help each other. I have not felt at all like there's competition. Mm. It's been, okay, well, if you're the better person for this job, you're the better person for this job. If you got there first, you got there first, but we still get along just fine. And what's really helpful in editing is that everyone has such a specific specialization or something that they are good at, that it's a lot of just, where can I refer you? Because there is a lot of understanding around, I may not be the best editor for this job. Like, I do a lot of speculative fiction. That's my preference. Mm. But some of the other people I know are like, I don't know anything about speculative fiction. I like to do nonfiction. I like to do memoirs, things like that. So they'll send someone my way and vice versa. Especially also there's developmental versus copy, all those things. And so we all just make connections and do what we need to get by while supporting each other. And it's been really great.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about tools. So obviously you got a laptop. Mm-hmm. I imagine you're probably using Microsoft Word or something like it. Mm-hmm. Are there any other tools that you find yourself using as a editor, writer in the year of our Lord, 2025?
Yeah. So Microsoft Word, especially with editing, their review feature is incredibly helpful. And that's kind of industry standard for editing, which is very helpful. And I love it so much. With the journalism at the Salish Current, we use Google Docs as well. We'll like transfer to that so that we can work on something together very easily at the same time and kind of go through and make edits. And I also love that there's the tab feature. So the tabs feature on Google Docs has helped with some different projects. But that's more so connecting, like with the newsletter, there are certain parts that Ethan has to give me information about for the newsletter. So I'll do tabs so he can input for the different pages. But also I do the design on some things. Like I personally designed the newsletter for Hunger Versus Hunger. So I use Canva for Salish Current. I also do photography. I use the Adobe suite, whatever I need. But yeah, thankfully I've been trained in the entirety of the Adobe suite and the Microsoft suite. And so, yeah, I'm pretty set. I just love to use all the different creative tools I like. But yeah, a lot of Canva.
So what about AI? Do you find that you ever use it?
I do not. I know Grammarly is really popular and that's technically a form of AI. It's pretty much just spell check, but more advanced. And I'm not opposed to that. AI is a very complicated topic in the creative world right now, clearly, as everyone knows. I've definitely got a different perspective than I used to on it. I personally don't plan to use it. I don't like it. you know, I think that's fair. But it's also, it can be a really helpful tool when used properly and ethically. And one of the things my professor pointed out to me recently, they had a whole thing about in every industry, there's always something that comes up where everyone's like, you can't do that. That's piracy. Haha. Yes, we can. And then that person, there's a new innovation. Like when you have cable TV, all of a sudden they made recorders where you could record your favorite shows. And cable was like, you can't do that. That's theft. They said, yes, we can. And then they came out with DVDs and people were like, you can't do that. That's theft. And it just keeps happening and they always lose. But then the industry adapts every time and we've always found a way to adapt. And while AI is a little scarier because this one is creating things using what we've created, it's the same concept of AI is gonna be here. You have to understand and accept that. You can't scream and rage against it. It's adapt or die, essentially. And so you have to accept that it is a tool that you can choose to not use, or you can accept and use very carefully. But all you can really do is fight for ethical protections, protections for creators, and making sure everything's done in a way that's not going to ruin the industry for those of us in it. But there's already new forms of writing coming out because of AI. And so the opportunities will be there. They just may be different.
And we're going to touch on that a little bit more in a future episode, but I'll share one anecdote before I go on to the next question. That's a little bit more important, but I remember when I first tried using Grammarly, I was back in university at the time. It's like, it sounds like a great idea. I already do. I'm in a liberal arts program. I already do enough writing. Let's see if it improves it. Oh, it was bad. Maybe this was a little too early in their day and age, but I don't know. I think that started to instill me with a healthy skepticism of these generative models.
As it should.
As it should.
Yeah.
So let's talk about something fun. Let's talk about money.
Sure.
So how do you determine rates that you charge when it comes to writing or for editing?
Yeah, so it's kind of complicated in terms of deciding what to charge someone, especially because, like I said, content and copywriting overlap sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I always charge by word count for the most part, or I'll do a flat fee depending on the project that's based on the approximate word count. Mm-hmm. And so that way expectations are set up in advance. And that way I know if it's worth taking on that project, if it's going to make me enough money based on what they want from me. But yeah, content and copywriting of different forms all have their own price range. And I use the EFA's calculator, so the Editors Freelance Association. Mm. They have a rate calculator on their website that uses data from all across America, essentially, to give you the average of what people are getting paid for certain services. And it breaks it down into really specific categories of services. And you can put in how much experience you have and where you live, things like that. But yeah, it gives you a much more specific idea of what range you should be charging personally. And you can kind of work around that. And so I use that to set my rates. People don't expect the rates to be what they are, but believe me, they are reasonable. when you think about the fact that we have to pay a third of our income to taxes because we're freelancers. But yeah, it's a really fantastic tool. So I use that to determine based on everything.
That's really handy. I wish I had that. So typically, if someone was to come and say, hey, I want you to create a regular blog on my website once a month, 1,000 words, how much is that going to cost someone normally?
Ooh, that's the thing. It's going to depend on content. Really? If you want me to just write about this certain topic, that's going to be one thing. If you want me to sell your business in this, that's going to cost you more. And if you want me to tie it in a certain way, it's going to cost a little different. But yeah, writing definitely costs more than editing, I will say. But it's usually going to be like for writing like a couple cents a word, something like that, which adds up quickly, yeah. Believe me. But yeah, with editing, it might be 2 cents or sorry, it'll probably be about 20 cents a word for writing and like 2 cents for editing or 3 cents or 30 cents. It really just depends on what you're doing.
That's a really wide bracket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's not then unreasonable to say that if I wanted like 1,000 word blog, let's say I'm advertising my site, so it's copy. So maybe it's even a little bit more. It's like 30 cents a word. God, it's not $300. It's probably closer to $3,000, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It really depends. And some people charge, depending on the service, $1 a word, depending on service and experience. I am nowhere near charging $1 per word.
Wow.
But it really depends on what you need.
Man, maybe I'm in the wrong field.
Join us.
Yeah, there we go. No, it's funny because we have similar conversations where we'll have businesses come out to us and they're like, hey, we want a video done up for us. It's like, yeah, sure, we could do that. Yeah, we want it to be a commercial that generates leads. We want it to go on YouTube. It's like, cool, sounds great. Mm-hmm. 30 seconds, we can get that done. How much is it going to cost? You know, we could be looking at like $4,000. It's like, what? But it's 30 seconds. How hard is it? How hard could it be?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can explain it. But that's just how the creative works go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I know. Even just in our Walk Me Young Professionals group that we're a part of, people will tell me what they charge. And I'm like, holy cow, that is more than I thought. But then working as a writer, I'm like, I understand. I know there's much more than I will ever understand going into what you charge. So I respect it.
Yeah. There are some things where we can be persnickety about price, but I've been humbled in my appreciation for how much things can cost and they're worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a wise lesson that every business owner especially has to learn. But if you get what you pay for, and if it's important, you better be ready to pay for it.
Oh, yeah. That's a big topic in editing. It's been a whole thing that you have to deal with as an editor is there are people on Fiverr and Upwork that will just be like, oh, give me $250 and I'll edit your whole book. And they don't know that there's different types of editing. They have no formal training. They don't know what they're doing. They just think, oh, it would be cool to get paid to read a book and tell them, good job, high five.
Yeah.
Your book is not going to actually improve very much. There's a reason that we get paid what we do. And it's because we've done a lot of work, a lot of training. We have a lot of experience. There's a lot of reasons that go into it. People don't know what to expect because there are people kind of flooding the market with things that are not what they think they are.
And it gets really tough where perhaps this is sore point for me, because we try going through those contracting sites mm-hmm. like Upwork and all that.
They are great resources.
They are mm-hmm. wonderful resources, but they can be very competitive in certain fields. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. Mm-hmm. But I remember we lost a whole bunch of bids, ultimately because a lot of the people who go to Fiverr for work, they're looking for cheap options, which is, again, that's mm-hmm. fine.
Yeah.
But when we're in Whatcom County, Washington State, we're not going to be able to compete with some fellow working in the Philippines or in East India. Or I should say India, not East India. But we have people over there where they can work for a fraction of the cost, and they do great work. Mm-hmm. Some don't, but many do great work. Mm-hmm. And so at a certain point, you got to say, yeah, you know what? If you're looking for price and you're willing to take the gamble, you can absolutely go for it. Mm-hmm. If you got the resources and you're a little bit more serious, you want that outcome to be a little bit more sure, then you look for someone like us.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the thing. I've had multiple authors come talk to me about things and be like, oh yeah, what are your rates? And then they're like, whoa, that is way more than the budget I had set. And I'll tell them, yeah, I completely understand. That's more than I would have expected if I didn't work in this industry. So there is no hard feelings if you go to Upwork and pay someone cheaper. Just know it's probably not going to be the same quality. Mm. But I get paid this much because I'm trained. I'm a professional. I know for sure what I'm doing. It's going to be a little different if you go to someone within that budget. But I will not judge you for it. Like, I absolutely understand. But yeah, it's a very complicated thing.
I'm curious, because again, as someone in the creative field, I wonder if you had the same experience as I did. Because when we first started, I had this neurotic self-criticism part of my brain that everyone has. But I remember thinking that there's no way I could reasonably charge someone more than like $100 for a video. And I remember I had a realtor come in, and he's a solid realtor. He's a good guy. And man, did he have grace with me. Because I said, yeah, you know what? I'll make these 10, 15 minute videos for you. Heavy editing, all that, do it for $100, because that's probably what I'm worth. And he took me up for it. And I spent like 2 weeks on these videos total. And I got them done and I gave them to him. And it was a bit of a wild journey. But I remember afterwards, I'm like, this can't be right for $100 each. I'm now at a point where I can say, yeah, you know what? I'm worth $1,000. I'm worth $4,000. Mm-hmm. Did you ever have that same journey?
Oh, yeah. I think most people in creative fields do. That was one of the first things that every mentor I've had has tried to drive home for me is the imposter syndrome is very real and you have to get past it, not just for yourself, but for the other editors too. Because if you're setting your rates too low, people think that's what they can expect. And it's also just, if you know what you're talking about and you're excited to do it, that's enough. Like, you have to know that you are worth more than that. You deserve to be able to pay your rent as well.
Yeah.
You really have to learn to get past that. And that's really difficult for me. I've never been good at having money conversations. I worked one job where I got 3 promotions, which just meant I worked all 3 positions and I never once got a raise. And I worked minimum wage and 2 of those were management positions.
Oh, that stinks.
So definitely was a learning curve for me. But now I set my rates. I stick to them. I budge a little bit if it's someone I know and love and it's a project I'm really excited about. But that's like a very minuscule amount. But yeah, overall, the imposter syndrome is one of the hardest things to get past, but it's working out.
Yeah. Now I've kind of been at that point where I've been beaten around and thrown around enough where I'm less scared of the money conversation now, because I recognize that, you know what, if you're not willing to hit certain thresholds, I don't say this because I'm crass, it's just not worth my time.
Yeah.
And this conversation that we're having, it's not worth your time. Mm-hmm. So go on ahead, find someone that will help. I'll even refer you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's okay for something to just not be a good fit or not work out on both ends. You just kind of have to adapt. If this isn't a good fit, I'd rather know now.
Exactly. Just have that conversation as soon as you can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Rebecca, that's been our time for this first episode. Thank you for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Cole.
Where can the good people find you?
My website is Such Creative Work, but Such is spelled with a T. So S-U-T-C-H. That is my last name. The pun is intended. So yeah, you can find me there and my socials are all there as well.
Wonderful. All right. Well, Rebecca will be back next time. Well, not next time for you. I get to keep having this conversation with her. Don't be nosy. But we'll see you next time. Until then, take care and be well. Bye-bye.